The budget stalemate has lapped more than 60 Illinois agencies helping victims of domestic violence without funding from the state since last July. What does this mean for the people who rely on their services?
We're their last resort, and they're really feeling like if I don't get out now, something awful is going to happen. I could die. Somebody's going to get hurt really bad. I need this right now.
That's Vicki Smith with the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence. We'll check in with two domestic violence service providers and speak with State Senator Maddie Hunter about efforts she's making to ensure agencies receive the money they're owed. Plus, for expectant parents, a common concern may be, how do I make sure my pet is prepared for the baby's arrival?
There are lots of changes that are coming with lots of things that dog is going to have to get used to that's going to be possibly stressful for the dog. So the most important thing they can do is start planning and preparing way in advance.
We'll get tips from an expert on children and pets. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Illinois is going on two straight years without a balanced budget. This means if for many agencies that rely on funding for the state, the money hasn't come through as promised. If you're a regular listener of the 21st, you know that because we've been talking to lots of different agencies, to public universities throughout the state about how they're doing. Today, we wanted to focus on one specific type of agency. Those who provide support to domestic violence survivors. There's more than 60 such agencies throughout the state of Illinois. And last year, when Illinois passed a six-month stopgap budget, the agencies were informed they would be included. It wasn't until 5 months later that officials alerted them that $9 million of funding had been eliminated. That forced layoffs and other cuts at some facilities. In a few minutes, we are going to be checking in with providers in both central and southern Illinois who help survivors of domestic violence. But first, I'm joined by Democratic Senator Maddie Hunter from Illinois' 3rd District, which includes parts of South Chicago in the southwest suburbs. She's the Majority Caucus Whip, and she joins us now on the line from Springfield. Senator Hunter, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Christina. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, it's Nyla, actually. Christine's my producer. But Senator, I wanted to start by asking the question we've heard from so many people. I got several tweets this morning. I was actually posting a story from my colleague, Brian Mackey, about the zero funding that domestic violence agencies have received. And the response that I got overwhelmingly from people on social media was that this was shameful and this was terrible. And so I wanted to start by asking you, why were domestic violence agencies left out of last year's six-month stopgap budget?
Well, actually, not only domestic violence organizations were left out, there were other organizations, non-for-profits and social service agencies that were left out. And it was because the governor's office decided that they were no longer going to support them and finance them because they were not a priority. And that's exactly what happened.
As we're talking
nor
about,
did they send them any notification. They had to find out themselves by scanning through the budget and found that they were not in the budget.
You know, as we say that, I wanted to bring someone else into this conversation. Vicki Smith is executive director of the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Both you, Senator Hunter, and Vicki Smith were at an appropriations meeting yesterday in Springfield, speaking to both Democratic and Republican state lawmakers. Vicki, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me as well.
Thank you for having me.
Vicki, it was that, as Senator Hunter saying, you know, many agencies found out they weren't in the budget simply by scanning it. Is that how you found out?
Well, actually, what happened then eventually was, as you know, the most recent stopgap budget was just, it wasn't in any particular order. It was 800 pages of line items throughout the state of Illinois. So the people who are providing services obviously don't have the time or the knowledge to really try to sift through and sort through what all that means. But the way that we eventually found out was we were told by the department staff that after contracts were signed and reports had been received for 4 months, that the GRF portion was not included in the stopgap budget.
Okay. So what did you say to lawmakers yesterday about where agencies are now? As I meant, you represent, the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence represents 62 different domestic violence organizations throughout Illinois.
Right. So the state of Illinois has contracts with 62 agencies. And what I said yesterday was just briefly, just trying to help everybody understand that we're now into the 10th month of this fiscal year, and all these agencies have provided 9 months worth of service already and received no money to reimburse them from the state for those services that have already been provided. And there's almost no one that can operate for 9 months with no pay for what they're providing. So what I said yesterday is the other piece of this that's really important to understand, it's not just the current 2 years that we haven't had a real budget. The budget has been a struggle since the recession in 2008. So beginning with fiscal year 2009, programs have not received information on time about how much money they're getting. Every year it's a different amount. So year after year after year, they're struggling. And now we're here at the point where now 2 years into not having a clue what they're going to get and when they're going to get it. It's just year upon year upon year of struggling through this morass.
And what kind of effect does that have on the providers and the people they're trying to help?
Well, I think, obviously, first and foremost, it's the extreme uncertainty of whether or not they're going to be able to hold on one more month, keep their staff for one more month, be able to answer their hotlines for one more month. And then I'm sure that goes out into the public. So someone sitting in their home who may be struggling with trying to decide, where do I go? What do I do? I'm in real danger here. If I pick up the phone and call, are they even going to be there to help me?
That's Vicki Smith. She's executive director of the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence. We're also speaking with Democratic State Senator Mattie Hunter. Senator, before you became a lawmaker, you were a director of a shelter. And I wanted to ask if you could explain to our listeners, when Vicki says that there are 62 agencies that are contracted to the state, what does that mean in terms of how that works in terms of how the state's supposed to be paying these agencies?
Well, what it means is that you have 62 wonderful agencies throughout the state of Illinois who provide essential services to battered women and their children. And without the funding, there is nowhere for these battered women and their children to go in the event of an emergency, you know. And so when the funding is not there, where are these folks going to go? Shelters are all backed up, homeless shelters are backed up, and these 62 agencies have specialization in terms of dealing with battered families, you see. And so it's important that they not go to any facility or to any shelter, but they must go to some of these 62 agencies because of the training that their staff has. And so they are very essential to the needs of the people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to fund them. We got to figure out some kind of way of getting them funded. But that is why I introduced Senate Bill 1848, which...
Right, that's the prompt. That's the Prompt Payment Act. What's that about?
Well, what it does is that what we're saying is that we should treat the people that care for our most vulnerable citizens fairly, such as programs such as Redeploy Illinois, homeless shelters for our youth, and others who are bearing the financial burden of the state of Illinois for almost 2 years where we've gone without a budget. This legislation will not only prioritize the payments human services providers need, but it also compensates these organizations for delayed payments. And this bill passed the House floor. I mean, it passed the committee, and so now it's on the House floor. And
it's on the House floor now. Yeah, what's your sense of what kind of support it has?
I'm sure I'll get the support that I need. The department registered against it because they do not have the dollars because of a lack of a budget to pay all of these organizations. But I'm going with it anyway, because at some point we will have a budget. And when the dollars are there, I want these organizations paid immediately.
You want them paid immediately, and it sounds like you also want them paid interest. Is that not built in? I know, for example, with medical service providers, with the backlog, the state pays back, for example, I believe it's a 10% interest rate.
No, I don't think there's a 10 any, excuse me, any kind of interest built into these for not-for-profits.
I wanted to ask Senator Hunter, you know, we've been hearing from agencies, and we're going to talk to some of these agencies in a few minutes. They're asking businesses and companies and citizens to donate to help them, to donate to help support these services to keep these domestic violence agencies alive, which is understandable given the situation they're in. What strikes me is they're essentially asking taxpayers to pay twice, because as a taxpayer, I've already paid into the state and the state is supposed to be paying. But because lawmakers haven't done their job to pass a budget, you know, we're now being sort of, as citizens, double taxed on this. And I wonder what's your response to that?
Well, I was once a provider for 18 years working in the not-for-profit field before I became a senator. And we've always been told, as well as known ourselves, that we should always diversify our funding, meaning you must have private funding, funding like foundations, you know, and also federal government funding, because you never know when your dollars are going to get cut from city and state governments because of budget crisis. But let me also clarify that we in the General Assembly, the Democrats, we have actually passed a budget every single year. It was the governor each time that vetoed that budget, and then he blamed the legislators, the Democratic legislators, for not having a budget. Well, he's the one that vetoed the budget, you know? And so we have the numbers to override it during the veto session in the Senate. But then you ran into all kinds of problems because the governor was successful in flipping a few Democrats over in the House, which meant that they cannot override the budget. And so therefore the veto stood. So let me just clarify that we have been doing our due diligence here in the General Assembly, and we have been passing the budget, but it's on the governor.
So from your perspective, you feel like Democrats have been doing that. Vicki, can I ask you to just weigh in on just something Senator Hunter said about diversifying sources of funding? From the 62 agencies your organization represents, how does that work in terms of where their funding tends to come from?
Well, every single agency raises private dollars, and by that I mean they have fundraisers or they seek money from private donors, foundations, that kind of thing. They have to have those. Then they also have a combination of state and federal sources that pay different parts and pieces. The money that we're talking about here from the state is actually their core operating funds. It keeps the lights on. It keeps the phone bill paid so that they have the hotline. It pays their rent. That, and it's, you know, if you don't have space, how do you provide the services? So that's the other piece of this. Yes, they all raise lots of extra money from other places. And the budgets, this piece of it, varies pretty dramatically around the state, depending on where the program is located and what kind of access they have to other private dollars. But if they don't have this core operating funds, it's really difficult to get anything else to provide those extra services. So, mm-hmm. Again, it's really the core of what they're trying to provide, and then everything else is built around that.
Are there certain parts of the state you would say where agencies are more vulnerable than others because of how much more perhaps they would rely on state funding versus private dollars?
Yeah, the more rural agencies in the state, and then the farther south you go in Illinois, the more rural we are, and the less access to any kind of foundation dollars. Populations are thinner, so there's not a lot of opportunities to do fundraisers. And they also cover multiple counties, most of those agencies. You're going to talk to two directors here in a minute, and both of those agencies cover multiple counties. The one from Olney is 14 counties they cover. So you have to also build in the additional costs of traveling, trying to find appropriate staff and training and all of that. So the farther south we go here in Illinois, the more difficult it is to find the resources to support these agencies.
Vicki, as you've been hearing from all of these agencies, what's the most concerning thing that you're hearing from all of these domestic violence agencies about the lack of funding they haven't received from the state?
Well, I think the most concerning thing is just being able to keep their doors open. How much longer are they going to be able to last? And we have to keep in mind that the cost of running these agencies is the same as any business. They have to pay employment taxes. They have to pay workers' comp. They have to pay the light bill and the phone bill. So the expenses are the same as any other business, and they are required. You can't be late on your workers' comp or your state taxes when you're paying their bills, regardless of whether the state has paid you or not.
And of those 62 agencies, do we have a sense of how many people are employed throughout Illinois working to help people who are victims of domestic violence?
I don't have that number, how many total staff they have, and it varies based on what they're able to piece together every year. But the question we have asked of them is, how many staff positions have you lost in the 2 years that we've been going through this current budget crisis? And what the information that we've received so far is that about 100 full-time equivalent positions have been lost.
Okay. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation, but I want to thank Senator Maddie Hunter for joining us. She's Majority Caucus Whip in the State House. A Democratic State Senator represents Illinois' 3rd District that includes parts of Southwest Chicago and some of the surrounding West and Southwest Chicago suburbs. Senator, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Vicki Smith. As she said, we're going to be speaking to specific agencies. As always, we want to let our audience know, if you or someone you know needs help, the National Domestic Violence Hotline number is 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-SAFE. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about domestic violence agencies in Illinois. I wanted to share a few statistics with you from the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. In Illinois, over a one-year span from 2013 to 2014, there were more than 80 domestic violence-related deaths in Illinois, including 15 children. On average, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the U.S. Why are we talking about this? Because domestic violence agencies haven't gotten funding from the state since last July. Last year, when Illinois passed a 6-month stopgap budget, the agencies were informed they wouldn't be included, and it wasn't until 5 months later that Illinois officials alerted them that $9 million of their funding had been eliminated. We've been speaking with Vicki Smith. She's executive director of the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence. By the way, as always, you're welcome to join this conversation. With your questions or comments, you can tweet to 21st Show, 21st Show. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. I want to bring two more people into this conversation. They're both executive directors of agencies that provide services to victims of domestic violence in Illinois. Carol Myrna is with the Center for Prevention of Abuse in Peoria. Linda Bookwalter is with the Stopping Women Abuse Now, or SWAN. She's based in Olney in Southern Illinois. They serve 14 counties in Southern Illinois. Carol, Linda, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nyla. Glad to be here.
Carol, can we start with you? I think, we were just talking about, and I think it's so easy to get caught up in the politics and the numbers and forget about the real people who are at risk here. So I wonder if you can just help us understand a little bit more about who are the people that your agency serves.
Well, it's a wide gamut, a very diverse group of people. Typically, the Center for Prevention of Abuse serves roughly 5,000 people a year. Women, men, and children, our goal is to help them live free from violence and abuse. And it's every socioeconomic group, every race, every gender, every age group, every religion. It's every possible demographic that you can imagine, and domestic violence is in every community. No community is immune from it, and our center has been in Central Illinois serving for 41 years and providing a valuable service. I just can't imagine life without the services we provide.
Linda, what kind of services do you all provide at SWAN? I know you serve a 14-county area.
We provide a variety of services. We not only provide domestic violence services, but we do an adult protective services program. We have, of course, an emergency domestic violence shelter, as well as walk-in services and satellite offices where we provide the domestic violence services and adult protective services. We also have a homeless shelter, and we do some transitional and permanent housing for people who are homeless as well as victims of domestic violence. So we have, pardon me, we have a variety of services that are offered in our 14-county area. And like the other person said,
What are adult protective services?
Adult protective services is a program in which people who are elderly, 60 or over, or who are disabled adults from 18 to 59, we go into the, we receive reports of abuse or neglect or sexual assault or financial exploitation. And then we have staff that are trained and go into the homes to investigate. A lot of times we end up with the elderly person or the disabled person who comes to our domestic violence shelter because it is a lot of times basically domestic violence that has grown old. And so they would come into the program. So even though they may come in as an adult protective services victim, they are a victim of domestic violence. So our shelter serves a variety, a variety of people in with different issues relating to domestic violence or elder abuse,
mm-hmm.
abuse of the disabled.
Right. Carol, what do you hear from the people who walk into your doors about the difference it makes for them to be able to have a place to go?
Well, a lot of times we hear things like, I don't know what I would have done without you. I had no place to go. We have a victim who had been abused by her partner and had slept in her car for 3 days and till she finally had somebody that said, there's a shelter that you can go to. So she came to our shelter. We had a woman who was beaten by her husband. He he strangled her. He hit her in the head with a hammer, and we helped her in our walk-in program by going and getting an order of protection. He is presently in jail and is awaiting trial. So there's a lot of different stories and issues of why women or men seek domestic violence services, and so our agency has to be trained and prepared to handle all of the variety of reports that we get.
And that's alluding to something Senator Hunter said earlier in the hour. She said it's really important that domestic violence agencies, that you need proper training. Is this what you're talking about, as opposed to someone walking into, say, a homeless shelter? Maybe they might not have the necessary training to deal with specific domestic violence situations?
Yes, I am, because a lot of times when women maybe go to a homeless shelter, they are afraid to report. Maybe they come to that shelter and their partner comes with them, so they're certainly not going to report what's happened, as well as a lot of times the homeless shelters are not necessarily aware of all the services and that are available to victims of domestic violence. There is a lot of training that has to go into when you assist someone in court with filing for an order of protection, and there's a lot of issues that you have to talk about that they're not going to find in a homeless shelter. You're going to have things where you need to know what to do. What do you do when you go to counseling if you leave our shelter, about our women's support group? You need to know what happens when you get an order of protection. You need to know that there's an option for the abuser to go into a court-ordered program for partner abuse intervention services. So you have a lot of different things that are available that they're not necessarily aware that they're available, and women and victims do not necessarily know that they can access if they initially go to a homeless shelter.
Carol, can you help us understand some of the challenges that people might face when they're trying to leave an abusive relationship?
Sure. On average, somebody leaves an abusive relationship about 7 times before they finally leave for good. And when you do leave an abusive situation, that becomes the most volatile time. So making sure that that person, maybe the mother and her children, are safe is essential. When somebody may go to a homeless shelter and They provide wonderful services, but being able to sit down with that person and do a safety plan to make sure that we understand the volatility of their situation, who their abuser is, so we can help be on the watch out for them, to make sure that they have what they need, because they may have been completely omitted from the family's finances. Maybe they've fled and left their eyeglasses at home. We're going to make sure that they have a pair of eyeglasses and a new prescription available to them. Maybe they fled in the middle of the night and the children left without shoes on, so we're going to make sure that that's taken care of. We want to make sure that every little piece of care that we can provide is there, so we're not giving them any encouragement to go back into that abusive situation. We want to give them as much support as we can and as much education as we can so they can make good decisions.
That's Carol Myrna. She's the executive director with the Center for Prevention of Abuse in Peoria. We're speaking also with Linda Bookwalter. She works with SWAN, Stopping Women Abuse Now, based in Southern Illinois. Vicki Smith is also with us. She's executive director of the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence. As a reminder, if you or someone you know needs help as you're listening, the National Domestic Violence Hotline number is 1-800-799-SAFE. Carol, how much money does the state owe your agency right now?
Well, it's we received a little bit of payment in the last few days for our adult protective services that we provide. We have been owed as much as $750,000 over this budget crisis. Right now, we're probably around $300,000 that we're owed, a little more than that perhaps. So a very solid piece of our budget. And just about all of that is represented through our domestic violence and family-centered services.
And I know you guys recently began a campaign. It's hashtag I Am The Bridge. What's that about?
We've used the description to encourage people in the community to support our services, asking them to help bridge the budget gap. And what you said earlier about having taxpayers pay twice is exactly right. But we've been very fortunate that we have a very solid donor base. They make investments in our center. Our message about helping care for your friends, neighbors, family, colleagues, and fellow human beings is very important. So bridging this budget gap includes, in the message that we recently provided, the $203,000 that we're missing because of being omitted from the stopgap for our domestic violence services. So we've had a really wonderful outpouring of support. We simply ask people to draw a half circle representing the bridge with a heart underneath with the hashtag I Am The Bridge. And if they could, besides showing that support visually and posting that on their social media, we ask them to visit the center's website or go to our Facebook page and provide us with a donation of any size to help care for those people and shore up the services that we have.
Linda, your agency is based in Southern Illinois. You serve 14 counties within your region. We heard earlier Vicki Smith talking about the toll, particularly the further south and more rural you go, how much harder it is on agencies. I wonder what kind of toll the budget impasse has been on your agency.
The budget impasse on our agency has been terrible. It's caused us to lay off staff. We have had to have quite a few of the staff go to 32-hour work weeks. We've had everyone, in addition, take off 2 to 3 furlough days a month. And unfortunately, being in the area that we're in, and as Vicki said, the farther south you go, we do not have the corporations. We do not have the ability to raise as many funds.
Right, like the folks in Peoria do. Mm-hmm.
Yes, as the folks in Peoria do. We just do not have that. We do fundraisers. We get United Way money from some of our counties. For instance, we serve 14 counties, and only 2 of our counties have a United Way. So we don't have that access to money. And so it's very, very difficult to raise money when our unemployment is extremely high, the factories are having trouble, and when you have a lot of what also hurts us, in addition to our program having a lot of trouble, is a lot of the resources that we would send victims to, such as mental health counseling. Our counseling centers are down to maybe 1 counselor or 2 counselors, and they're also in the same predicament that we are, that they're maybe going to have to close. We also have other social service agencies that have, you know, that are not there anymore, so it makes it more difficult. I know that the agency that operated in Centralia and covered a 5-county area, their agency closed. They were a domestic violence program. They closed.
Okay, so then that puts obviously more pressure on you
that
guys.
That puts more pressure on us
right.
and other things. So it makes it very difficult. We tried the GoFundMe stuff, but was not very successful in raising very much money from that. We also submit, you know, we request money from different corporations. For example, we have a local corporation that we're trying to get some money from. Their grant that they give, the maximum is $1,000. That's wonderful that we can get the $1,000, but $1,000 doesn't go very far when you're trying to make up about $150,000, $160,000.
How much does the state owe you guys right now?
They probably are behind to us probably about $150,000, $160,000.
And you know, what percentage does that represent of your budget?
That they represent about 78% of our domestic violence budget.
So that's 78% of your budget. Carol, how about you guys? How much state funding does that represent of your budget?
We have a $4.5 million agency-wide budget, and the state contracts to us for about 40% of that typically.
Okay. Linda, I know there was a period of time in 2015 that the shelter at Swan had to close its doors. What happened during that point?
Well, it was very stressful for everyone involved. It was also stressful when people would call and you'd have to say, I'm sorry, our shelter services are closed. We sent out letters to the police department, social service agencies, advising them that we no longer had our residential shelter for domestic violence services, and we also had to close our homeless shelter. We tried to keep a little bit of money in our leftover so that if someone had a real emergency, we would put them up for maybe one night, two nights in a hotel until we could transfer them to another program that might have been open. So our agency has weathered the storms, but during that time, we also used up the majority of our reserves, and now we're getting to a point where our reserves are almost non-existent. So we're looking at the possibility of once again closing the services for residential, but we are in a position as such that it may be more than that. We may have to look at closing the domestic violence services, period, as well as some of the other services, because we just do not have enough money. Money is not there.
How much longer do you think you can survive?
I'm hoping to survive at least until the end of June, but I'm not sure what
will happen. So it's really that tight. It's really as if you don't get the money within 1 or 2 months, the domestic violence services may end.
Yes, but even with the domestic violence services closing, that means some of the other services that we offer will close also. It isn't just domestic violence. Like Carol, we recently got some money for adult protective services, but we're behind in getting that money. So it makes it hard when you have everything that hinges on GRF money from the state when all the different programs are not getting money, that you not are just lacking in one program.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to tell people who call your hotline who are looking for services that you're not able to help them. What can you do? What do you do when you're in that situation?
Well, you go home and cry a lot, and then you basically kind of pray that nobody's going to die. Because people do, as it's evident by the number of people and victims that die daily and are injured every day, every hour, every minute. You try to do the best that you can with the resources you have. You try to put them up in another program. You try to get them, talk to them at least about making some kind of safety plan. If there's some money you can find in your budget, then you may say, do you have a family member or a friend that lives out of state or someplace else? You try to get them on a bus and get them sent there.
Yeah.
So
if you can hold on just a second,
sure.
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about domestic violence agencies across Illinois. We're talking about the lack of funding, the zero funding that they've gotten from the state. I'm speaking specifically right now with Linda Bookwalter. She's executive director of Stopping Women Abuse Now. They're based in Olney. They serve about a 14-county region in southern Illinois. Linda, I just want to go back to that point. I think people who are listening were sort of probably stunned, as I was, to hear you say sort of what you do because of the lack of state funding, when there have been times you've had to shut your doors, when people are calling asking for help and you're not able to do that. I just wanted to give you a chance to finish that thought.
Well, it's just very frustrating. It's stressful for all the staff to know that they try to help women, they want women to be safe, and that you, due to a lack of funds and that it's nothing that we have any control over, that we are not able to do what we have been trained to do. I know that in 2015 when we closed, I lost trained staff that when we did open back up refused to come back because of the uncertainty of funding. So by hiring new staff, I've incurred a lot more expense because I've had to retrain people. And each time you close, each time you have to train people again, it costs you additional money. And it also costs you, you don't have as many trained people, so when people come in and you're overwhelmed with the number of people that come into your program, it makes you reduce the number of services that you can provide or reduce what you're able to provide to the victims. And it's just it's a very stressful time. This is a very stressful time. I cannot tell you that almost on a daily basis I get asked, are we going to stay open? How long are we got? What are we going to do when we can't help people? And it's very hard when you, as the director, you don't have an answer. You can't provide an answer. You can't provide reassurance to not only the victims who've been in here, that are in here, but also to the staff that you have, who are very good. I have very excellent staff that are very conscientious, very caring, empathetic people, and want to help victims of domestic violence. And so you try to do the best that you can with the resources you have, but sometimes those are just not enough.
That's Linda Bookwalter. She's executive director of Stopping Women Abuse Now, or SWAN, in southern Illinois. I want to bring Vicki Smith back into the conversation. She represents 62 domestic violence agencies across Illinois as director of the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Vicki, as you've been hearing Linda, we heard from Carol earlier, she directs the Center for Prevention of Abuse in Peoria. As we're hearing these just heartbreaking stories, I wonder, how common is this compared to the 60 other agencies that you represent?
Well, I think you could talk to all 60 of the managers of those programs and they'd tell you exactly the same thing. They are, and it's compounded the longer we go, because as Linda and Carol both told you, they're very good at figuring out how to run these programs in the best of times on shoestrings, begging wherever they can get dollars and resources to run these agencies. But as this goes farther and farther along, it's harder and harder. The other piece of this, of course, is all those other services that they were referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Mental health services,
right.
Substance abuse services, elder abuse services. Those are falling down, too. And an individual citizen in Illinois who has any one of those issues may also have other issues. And if they can't get in the emergency services, the domestic violence program to start with, and then begin to put the other pieces of their lives together, all of that's just compounded. In my opinion, this is costing the state of Illinois so much money and so much, so many resources in terms of people.
So much more money, it sounds like.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. Every day we go by without them figuring out how to resolve their differences just compounds. It's a compounded interest. If you could think about it in fiscal terms, these are human lives that are just being wasted. It is dramatic because these are human beings that can't get what they need.
Linda, what message would you want lawmakers to – what message do you want state lawmakers to hear right now?
I would hope that they could put aside their differences, come to some type of compromise, and get a budget so that programs can move on and can stay open and provide services to the citizens of the state of Illinois. We need a budget. We need it now. We don't need it 6 months from now. We need it now, because what's going to happen is they need to realize that in a few months, those resources that people have had for the citizens of the state, they're not going to be there. And then what are they going to do?
Carol, what's your message to lawmakers?
A number of things, but I think first and foremost, when I meet with the lawmakers that represent our service area, I let them know that I respect that they have very, very tough decisions to make, but so do we. And my heart goes out to Linda and her staff and the people that they serve, because they're in a very desperate situation. We're not quite to that point, but if nothing is resolved, we are headed there. And it's what's sad is the budget has been weaponized, and it's a potential for a weapon of mass destruction here. And we need lawmakers. We would never ask anybody to compromise their principles, but compromising for the sake of principle is good leadership. And the greater good has to be considered here in caring for the people of Illinois, creating solid foundations through good human services. Is an essential service, and it needs to be cared for.
Vicki, I know when you were testifying yesterday, you testified to the Senate Appropriations Committee. Do you have a sense that that there's an understanding that there are actually lives at stake here?
Yes, I think, and Carol and Linda can probably attest to this, when we speak to the lawmakers, they understand, we're talking about people. They're coming at it from their own personal perspectives, but they still understand that I think the bottom line is that our businesses, our communities are the ones that are going to suffer because of this. If we don't figure out how to get a budget done so that we pay for these services now, our communities are going to be paying much more later. And that's the piece, I think. They understand that people are not safe. They understand that these services need to be provided. I don't think they understand the long-term ramifications and the costs of what this really means.
That's Vicki Smith. She's executive director of the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence. They represent 62 different organizations across the state, including Carol Myrna's Center for Prevention of Abuse in Peoria and Linda Bookwalter's Stopping Women Abuse Now, or SWAN, in Southern Illinois. Both of them are the executive directors of those particular agencies. Vicki, Carol, Linda, thank you for being with me.
Thank you for having me.
As a reminder,
thank you so much, ladies. As a reminder, as we've been talking about this, if you or someone you know needs help, the National Domestic Violence Hotline number is 1-800-799-SAFE. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been talking, of course, all this hour about how domestic violence agencies are struggling to survive without funding. That's because, as we've been saying over and over, Illinois hasn't had a budget. We're at 22 months right now. Lawmakers, as you've been hearing, haven't been able to agree on the right way to end the stalemate. Most recently, the so-called grand bargain from the state Senate that was negotiated between Republican Senate Minority Leader Christine Redonio and Democratic Senate President John Cullerton fell through last month. This time, two more state senators are taking a crack at this, two Republican state senators. Yesterday, Senators Kyle McCarter and Dan McConchy unveiled what they call a taxpayer bargain. And we're joined on the line now from Springfield by Senator Kyle McCarter. He represents Illinois' 54th district. It stretches all the way from Effingham all the way about to 20 miles from the St. Louis border. Senator McCarter, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You and Senator McConkie's plan includes 17 pieces of legislation. You've been asking state agencies to cut spending by 10%, universities by 5%, while protecting funding for K-12 education, Medicaid, and pension payments. Yesterday, in a news conference, you said this plan doesn't propose any new taxes or increases in taxes. How do you think these cuts are going to be enough to pay for the budget solution you've put forward without a tax increase?
Well, because the numbers add up. And let me just tell you that the way I started this exercise was to go to legislators of both parties, both in the House and the Senate, mostly in the Senate, and ask every one of them, what are your ideas? How, you know, what can we do to make this government smaller and more affordable to the people, to where we don't have to penalize them with another punishing tax increase as we did previously? And they gave me their ideas. I had my own. We put those together. There was a tremendous amount of compromise. And at the end of that, we had about $9 billion of ways to save money or actually make some tough cuts, putting those into the formula of the money that we have and what we owe people, and maintaining our commitments to education and to the most vulnerable and those and with Medicaid, the numbers add up to a balanced budget. Now, it wasn't easy. It was a very difficult process, and there's a lot of people that have to take some challenging cuts and reduce the size of their budget. But I would say this: if you're a family or you're a small business, and I was to tell you that if you would just live on 95% of what you've got right now, reduce the size of your budget by 5%, that you could still exist, you wouldn't go bankrupt, your kids wouldn't go hungry, and you could take care of the things that you needed to if you would just do that. Most people would take us up on that offer.
Okay? Yeah. So, Senator McCarter, I mean, do you have a sense that, have you heard from Senate leadership on this? I wonder if Senator Redonio agrees with you that the numbers add up. I don't know if you've talked to Senate President Cullerton about this at all yet.
I have been speaking with both leaders, and they have all our numbers. They have the complete budget with all the language, with all the bills and the ways that we're doing this. This is another unique thing about this budget. There's complete full disclosure. This is not 18 pages of paper where we say, listen, let's pass this and find out what's in it. This is, and let me try to, you know, at times people, I believe there have been legislators in the past that have tried to dupe people into thinking that something was really good in that, and it's not that good. But we're giving complete full disclosure on this, and yes, we're talking with them. In fact, I've already invited them, and they have accepted to sponsor some of the bills in this package because some of them are if not
yeah, which
identical.
Ones are they particularly interested in?
Well, there's pension reform is a big part of everyone's budget.
Sure.
And Senator Cullerton has a cost consideration bill that you know he's put forward, and we include that in this proposal.
Sure. Senator, how do you, I guess the tough thing about balancing pension reform is how much of that depends on court challenges. In particular, have you thought about that? I mean,
and let me tell you how much we count as a savings for that cost and consideration bill. Zero. We factor zero into that because we understand that realistically, that's going to go to court, and it has a high probability of coming back and being ruled unconstitutional.
Mm.
So I'm not adding that into our numbers.
Sure.
We're being very real with the numbers and estimating what we believe we really have.
So unfortunately, we've just got about a minute left, Senator, and I wanted to just ask you very quickly, as we spent most of the hour talking about domestic violence agencies, the difficult situation they're in, what kind of funding are you looking at for social service agencies?
Well, we're looking at level funding for them. And we're prioritizing our spending. And let me say too that any revenues that come in above our projected FY18 numbers, 25% of that goes to education, 25% of that goes to infrastructure, 10% of that goes to paying pension payments that we owe our pensioners. And so, I mean, this is a very austere program. It forces legislators to live within their means. If they don't,
and so by level funding, you mean funding that they were supposed to get in 16, I guess, in financial year 16.
No, it comes off the governor's FY18 autopilot maintenance level. which is a full year's funding.
Really quick question for you. Have you been able to speak to the governor about what you're proposing?
I spoke before I introduced this. I spoke to the governor's people, and they too verified that the numbers look good. We'll see whether they jump on board to help push this through the legislature.
Yeah, thanks for that. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media.